In this episode, we take a look at a recent analysis that says that Teslas are the deadliest cars on the road. Hello, welcome to the Car Like I See It podcast. I'm James Keys, and joining me today is a man, when it comes to the podcast game, is an underground legend. Tunde Ogonlana. Tunde, you ready to show the people the way we ball?
Of course, man. I didn't know I was a legend, but I guess that's what the kids say, right?
I guess so. Yeah. So before we get started, if you enjoy the show, I ask that you subscribe and like the show on YouTube or your podcast platform. Doing so really helps the show out. Now, recording on May 27th, 2025, and Tunde, we recently saw some interesting comments, actually, what got us kind of looking at this, from former NBA player Gilbert Arenas, and whose son, who is a young teenager but basketball player and highly, you know, sought after recruit and so forth, was in an accident in a Cybertruck not too long ago and was trapped in the car, had to go into an induced coma due to smoke inhalation and so forth. And so Arenas was talking about this, his son's accident, on the All the Smoke podcast. And what he said specifically was that the crash, or the reason his son was trapped or had the accident, was that the steering wheel went limp while his son was driving. And then, you know, he wasn't prepared, and also just wasn't able to get out once the accident had happened. His son, Elijah, ended up being okay. So the story doesn't end in tragedy. But you shared with me a piece, you know, that kind of built on this from Motor Trend. And it was discussing an analysis from IC Cars, that business. And it showed that Teslas are the deadliest cars on the road based on the metric of fatalities per mile driven. Now, Tunde, so what's your reaction to seeing these stats? Well, one, you know, like the whether you have something on the accident, but just also just how dangerous Tesla cars are.
Yeah, man, it's very interesting, James. And I want to say for the audience watching us on YouTube, I'm having a bad hair day, which is why I have the rare time I got to wear a hat. But I didn't shave my bald head.
They don't know that you can see my shave your head.
Yeah, no. Well, then get on the YouTube. Everyone's got access. But if you can get us streaming, you can get YouTube. But no, to answer your question, James, to get into it, yeah, I find it very interesting because you're right. We've been hearing chatter for a long time, for years, about safety standards. First of all, let's go into safety standards in general, right? We know that the auto industry has, you know, had a history of some of these issues with consumer safety on the road. But then Tesla as a company has had a little bit more scrutiny in recent years. And they've tried some newer things that other car companies haven't, like driverless cars. Self-driving cars, not driverless. So with those new technologies, there's been accidents, there's been fatalities. And then to your point about what's happened to Mr. Arenas' son, I know personally of people here in South Florida, unfortunately, that lost a teenage son due to a Tesla hitting a tree, catching fire. And unfortunately, the young man was stuck in the car and burned to death. And like you said, Mr. Arenas' son ended up in a coma due to smoke inhalation. So even though he survived, you know, he's probably right there at the edge, or if had it been a few more minutes, maybe he might not have. So
yeah. To me, it's got me interested. Just to
he's okay.
So, I mean, he's made a full recovery, but yeah.
Yeah, but it got me curious as to, well, what's going on with Tesla? Why do they have a track record which is double the average? Like you said, I learned in that Motor Trend article that they have a double their record of fatalities, let me just put it this way, is double the national average for a car company. And so that just got me curious.
Per miles driven. That's not like right. That's a pretty, it sounds like a pretty fair metric. Like per miles driven, they have twice as many fatality accidents as the average, the normal.
Yeah. And so it just got me curious and they're looking into it. And I guess that's the basis of our conversation.
Yeah.
What is going on here?
Yeah, there's the state safety standards was kind of where my mind drifted to. Also, though, I think that something else has happened just with the auto industry in general, and Tesla's kind of on the forefront of this. And that is, like, our cars, like, depending on how old you are, cars are mechanical devices or they're mechanical devices with electronics. But what cars are now aren't necessarily, they are electronic devices with mechanical parts. You know, it's kind of changed. And so what's going on? And so when this guy's talking, and when Arenas is talking about the steering wheel went limp, I'm like, well, what are you talking about? Like, isn't the steering wheel connected to a shaft that's connected to something? And then those rotating parts caused the wheel to turn? And it's like, well, now yes, it was when it was a mechanical device. Now the steering wheel, based on turning, is generating some combination of zeros and ones, some digital signal. That digital signal is being sent to some other electronic device that's receiving that, and then deciding how much to adjust everything based on what's the signal. And so I think there's a fundamental change in that, because we all have electronics. You know, we have, you know, cell phones and TVs and all that kind of stuff, that's computers, all that. And we know, like, yeah, sometimes these things just kind of go crazy a little bit. But for us, you know, when it's like that, it's like, okay, let me turn it off, turn it back on, and then everything will usually be okay. And so, like, if my car is like that as well, what happens if I'm going 70 miles down the road and then some kind of thing, like, I just need to turn it off, turn it back on, but I'm in the middle of driving, you know? So the idea that the cars have changed, and we may just not be conscious of that, like, we probably need more regulation, more regulators looking at, okay, well, hold up. When you start changing the things that make this thing move and maneuver, and those become digitized, then in terms of how it's operating and not just responding to a mechanical action, what more risk are we introducing there? And so, and again, Tesla's been on the forefront of this stuff, you know, in terms of really pushing the envelope of the departure from relying on more mechanical stuff. It makes it smoother. It makes it, you know, all that kind of stuff, but it introduces a level of risk, and that there's something happening there where Tesla is such an outlier from the norm. You know, like, it's twice as many, you know, fatalities per, and it's, they think it's 5.6 fatality accidents per billion miles driven. So it's still relatively small, you know, but the average being 2.8 is like, well, why is it that much different? You know, so I think at minimum it's something we need to be looking at a little more closely.
Well, I think you bring up something profound, actually, and it's a great point regarding.
Okay, sir, I appreciate it.
Well, hey, don't let it get to your head too much.
Well, see, that's how we do it. I always compliment you at the very beginning, and then you can throw them back at me.
In the show. I give you 1.25. You know, I don't want to do it too much. You know. I'm gonna call Deanna and say, "Hey, we got to keep them even keel here."
But my wife will be happy to hear that. Over here, bigging my head up.
But no, it's the profound thing is, honestly, man, it's because I think you hit something on the head, which speaks to, I think, a lot of the conversation we should be having in the greater society. We're not, but
there's no time to talk about that stuff, man. Well, we got all this other, let me just say this way, social issues.
No, but the way that you succinctly put it in terms of how we grew up with a vehicle, you're right. I mean, I think about before we were born, they were really all mechanical, the Model T Ford, right? But when you and I were kids in the 80s, 90s, I mean, the cars had obviously some computer components, but it was everything.
It was a mechanical device, yeah.
Yeah, correct. Like you said, when you, you know, move the steering wheel, actual mechanical parts were moving behind the scenes.
Yeah.
Now, like you said, the steering wheel movement, you know, hit sensors, and those sensors, based on microprocessors and all that, then tell the car what to do. And so that creates a much different environment. And yes, from a safety standard, then that changes, that when you get into a car accident, maybe you get locked into the car if it's all based on electronics unintentionally. Doesn't mean that the car manufacturer is malicious. It's just the way that once the electronic connection to open the door is broken because of the accident or the fire, the door stays locked, and a normal human being can't push open a metal door that weighs a certain amount. Versus the mechanical.
We've observed this just real quick. We've observed this actually years ago with the windows. Remember the windows being when they were mechanical and you had to roll the thing.
Roll them down.
If your car went into the water, you could still roll the window down. But once the windows operated on electrical signals, and you just got it, it's easy to just pull the knob versus. Or, you know, push, pull the knob or whatever versus to have to rotate that thing, then, yeah, your car goes in the water. You might not be able to open those windows. You probably can't.
On a whole different tangent, I think the rolling windows versus electronics what made our society soft. Because I can see my kids complaining today if I told them, hey, roll down the window, but they actually got to roll
it. It's those like, type of issues that
they'd be like, Dad, I got to, what do you mean there's not
worry
a
worry about the car safety. Like, it's that, it's wokeism, it's all those things you got to worry about.
but we
don't have time to talk about car safety.
No, but that's why I thought, like, that's why I wanted to highlight your comment of just being very good, because I think we could extrapolate that to a lot of other parts of society where the infusion of technology into old industries or the way that we have been used to doing things, and then the speed at which these changes have come about, which is really, even though we know computers have been around for a long time and cars have been around a lot for a long time, like you're saying, Tesla is the first attempt at making a computer that happens to drive on the street. So what do we do with that, to your point? From a regulatory standpoint, does this type of automobile fall under the same regulatory framework as a traditional automobile that's all just or primarily mechanical parts? Or do we need to have some new way to look at this now that we have the data that says that, like you said, this vehicle has doubled the fatalities of the national average of other vehicles? So does that mean we need to look at how a computer that has four wheels and drives humans around should be regulated versus an automobile that happens to have computer components in it? So I just thought, that's why I said it's a profound.
Yeah, but just to be clear, we're talking about the actual, not even a driverless car, but just you being a human driver, your interface and your interaction is all with parts that when you push a button, it doesn't, or when you do something, it doesn't mechanically move something. It sends, it causes a signal to be sent. And so that level of connectivity, while adds a lot of convenience, it also creates additional risk. And so that, and then the other piece I think that, you know, is just like you touched on it, is the regulatory piece. We know just the way that Musk operates publicly, that he's not that, like regulation to him is not an opportunity to improve. You know, like that is like, okay, well then I need to pay off the regulators, or I need to get into the government so I could then close the office of the regulators. And, you know, like he does a lot of things to deal with regulation that don't involve changing and improving the product or making it safer. And so, you know, like I think that—
Interesting. I'll buy a social media platform to convince everyone that I'm a safe
that's
guy.
That's another one.
Seriously, like it's a good point you make. Yeah, like he does all this other stuff. It's like a kid that spends more time cheating on the test.
Then so, yeah, learn figuring out how to cheat.
Yeah,
and just studying.
It just shows you the mentality. Like I'd rather just go around it than do the normal way of you know. So anyway, sorry.
Yeah. So something. So that's a notable behavior when we had like, look, if they were super safe, then you know it'd be like, okay, that's just a personality quirk. But since they're not, then it's like, well, hold up, you know, that may be introducing an additional risk, particularly where there may not need to be additional risk, but just because of this mentality of, oh, you're not going to tell me what to do. Oh, I need, you know, I'm not going to make this thing. You know, you say this is unacceptable risk, you know, we'll be the judge of that or something like that. So I think that mentality is something to, you know, keep an eye on as well.
I've got a question for you then. Are you saying there's a connection between the world's richest man in the world who then through a Supreme Court ruling in 2012 is now allowed to give unlimited money into politicians who then make decisions on who may work in certain agencies that regulate him?
Hey, this guy may be able to... He put enough money up. He may be able to close entire agencies.
Yeah. So he put enough money in. So about $290 million bought him the ability to start a new agency called DOGE and then become the head of it so that he can then go and to directly into the agencies that were telling
him
how
to
regulate.
Yeah. Everything.
That's interesting.
We're speaking hypothetically though, right?
Yeah, I know. That would be a smart thing. Hey, look, honestly, that might not be how I do it, but that could be a smart way for the richest guy in the world to handle the fact that he's being scrutinized for making cars, among other things that he's got, that have twice the death rate than the average car in this country. So that's very interesting.
Well, I mean, so I got a question then. You know, understanding that. Like, again, you said, all right, I don't like what's being said on me about this platform. Let me just buy the platform and then I can control what's being said. Do you think that this is a story that's underblown? Like when you sent this to me, you were like, man, I had no idea. So, I mean, obviously we're not over here monitoring vehicle safety reports, but just in general, do you think that it's something that's underblown that we have, you know, that one of the more popular, you know, car companies is twice as deadly as the national average in terms of fatalities per mile driven?
Well, say what you want to say about your time in your personal life. I spend a lot of time looking at these
stuff. Looking at Motor Trend.
Motor Trend and trying to be the next Ralph.
Hey, fair enough. You're the one that sent, when we talked about the arenas thing, you're the one that sent me this. So, you know,
I'm joking. Then I woke up from my dream. But Jamie, this is interesting, man, because in preparing for today and reading about all this other stuff, because of course I start going down my rabbit holes. One thing leads to another, and I'm looking at how Starlink is being, another company owned by Mr. Musk, is being pushed around the world right now, and certain geopolitical positions are being taken in order, it appears to me from the surface that our country is being led into geopolitical stances. Some may be similar, some may differ from our historical norms, due to the desire of this one individual to have his company, Starlink, offer internet services and all that.
Explain, yeah. what are you talking, like you're speaking very coy. So give me an example of what you're speaking.
So for example, it appears that, the country of South Africa, there's a big desire for a gentleman who was born in South Africa to have his Starlink service bought by the country. So that, he can make the revenue and his business gets those contracts. South Africa has said, we don't want to do that. They got other relationships, other big tech firms that they're dealing with, right? And instead of just accepting that or maybe becoming more competitive so he can compete with Google and Microsoft, whoever else got these contracts, he decides through his media platform to begin a propaganda campaign that white South Africans are being, killed and all this stuff. And that there's a genocide. Then that morphs into actions by our government. When we have been told that immigration's bad and refugees are getting kicked out and all that, we've invited as a nation Afrikaner refugees from South Africa and given them benefits and farmland when we're hurting our own American farmers. So that's an example of how the country has actually changed its international geopolitical stance as it relates to South Africa.
And you're saying that it appears or alleged that this is being done in order to give Musk a better negotiating position?
Yeah, because here's the evidence. We know that just over a week ago, but like you said, the date, we're in late May here in 2025, the South African president was invited into the Oval Office of the United States. And, what could many people would agree is an embarrassment in how that meeting was conducted by our administration. And magically, within a few days after that press conference in the Oval Office, the South African government is now reconsidering their contract with Starlink. So it appears without, obviously, like I said, from the surface, it appears that as a bullying tactic that the richest man in the world is bullying not only people within the U.S. government with the DOGE agency and his role in it or what it's been, but he's using that power and that leverage to get government officials, primarily in this case, we're talking about the President of the United States, to behave a way on the world stage that we've never seen in American history before. So he's
basically made the U.S. government, or at least parts of it, a pawn in his game to go around kind of the official ways of doing things or something like that.
This is what we were warned about, money and power, right?
Yeah. I was going to say, it sounds like somebody using power and money and influence to go about things a certain way. And so the question being, would it be possible that he could be doing that with Tesla as well? To bring it back to the point here, like would it be possible that when regulators are bringing up stuff about the company, he's either getting them fired or he's closing down an agency or something like that, or that he saw that was an opportunity to do that? We don't necessarily know for sure, but again, there is a tendency here that we can't ignore when there's a connection that goes into the fact that when there's these numbers that suggest that these cars are very dangerous.
There was a Senate study already done this year. I'm just going to say $1.19 billion in potential liability as a result of Tesla's allegedly false or misleading statement about its autopilot and full service driving features. That was one of these investigations he shut down as relates to DOGE. So, yes, I just want to say for the audience, there's a direct correlation.
It was a windy road, but I mean, the point being that we see he gets his hands in the government the people that would be protecting us from a car company having such an outlier fatality rate. And he gets his fingers into there and he starts doing everything but, for, you know, making the situation better from a safety standpoint, but actually just manipulating
the system. Same things with SpaceX, Neuralink, you know, the one with the chips Neuralink,
we've heard reports about
that. Yeah, $280 million in potential liability from Neuralink's alleged false or misleading statements about its potential risks and many more. So here's a guy that wants to put microchips in people's heads.
Yeah.
He's lying about the, I guess, the research and all that. And then, you know, when the government, to protect us as citizens, because we're the ones he wants to put the chips in the heads on, right, and sell all this to us. When they say, hey, man, you know, you're not doing it right, that you're hurting people or animals or whatever they're doing, and to fine him, now he gets to go in and break up that regulatory body, and he gets to make it go away. So,
yeah, I mean, it sounds a lot like Bond villain stuff, man.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Hey, look, you know what I thought of, James, honestly, is that this country was founded by the founding fathers from a government standpoint as a way to make sure we don't have centralized power like King George, right? To diffuse this kind of power in the center. Then 140 years later, by the 1930s in the New Deal, they had done it to private capital, like trying to stop what happened in the Gilded Age, that you know, guys like J.P. Morgan can't be wealthy enough to lend a U.S. Treasury gold just because he feels like it, right? And all this, or these guys that were... Yeah, these guys became more powerful than nation states. And so what happens is the first 140 years of our country was about how to break that kind of stranglehold between capital, like power through money, and like leading people, like leading a big country like this. And it seems like in the last 50 years or so, those guardrails have been dismantled. And we are here.
Humpty Dumpty just put it back together again, basically.
Yeah, like literally, this like, is the robber barons. Like, I've thought about it, James. We grew up with stories about like Ebenezer Scrooge and you know the Grinch, and those stories came from the 1800s when guys like this were controlling, you know.
Everything. I mean, well, I think that definitely for something like this, whether the story is underplayed, I would think yes, it is. Just because, I mean, this is information I would want readily available if I'm looking to buy a car. One of the things I would put in the in throw it out there though, which was interesting to me as well, is that so you know Motor Trend has this report on this analysis by IC Cars or iccars.com. But IC Cars, you know, part of what they say in there is that actually they think, and I don't know, again, I'm going to take their words at face value, and we can parse them out if we want. But they said that it's actually the characteristics of the drivers that drive these rates more than anything. There's a physics aspect. Smaller cars are going to be, you know, generally speaking, more prone to act when it's in accidents, more prone to have fatalities, you know, things like that. Sports cars tend to indicate more risky behavior. But they said in particular, like, we don't think this is a small or large car issue, you know, but they did think that the drivers of the car. So I also wonder, I mean, is there a built into this, is there a early adopter kind of effect? Like, okay, what's the kind of person that drives a Tesla? You know, it's a new car brand, hadn't been around, doesn't have a long track record, but they're trying to do something, you know, that is different or whatever. And that's like an early adopter kind of thing. And early adopters, maybe what we're seeing here also, you know, in addition to like steering wheels going limp, so it's not to let the company off the hook, but steering wheels going limp or whatever other, you know, with these potential electrical malfunctions that could, or electronics, you know, malfunctions with electronics, but just kind of maybe early adopters are more risk takers, you know? And so in addition to the cars maybe not being up to snuff safety wise, which, you know, again, I'm not in here inspecting. I rely on regulators for stuff like that. I wonder if there's a Tesla driver thing, you know, early adopter or some other characteristic that may be more prevalent in drivers of Tesla or not. Specifically, I wondered that because this piece specifically says, which we'll have in the show notes, that, you know, the drivers, you know, matter, you know, in terms of like this. And so maybe it's not as broad of a slice of the public, but more of a type or a part of the public that is, you know, that's more risk tolerant.
That's a fair assessment. You're a fair-minded guy, given Mr. Musk break.
Man. Oh my gosh, am I doing here?
You're just I got no argument with you. I mean, look, more study. The fact that
what they said specifically was that fatality rates at a brand level is a driver behavior rather than vehicle size or design. And so that's, you know, and again, and I don't know if they're carrying water for Musk because they don't
know
the lawsuit, you know, because again, we don't know he does that. You know, he'll sue these people. And it's like, well, the numbers are the numbers, man. But it's like, oh, they throw that in there in case they get sued or something like that. Just because when you have a lot of money, then you can sue people a lot of times just to make them spend a lot of money on something. And because you got more money than they do, so you can, you know, it hurts you less than it hurts them. So who knows?
But like suing people who don't advertise you. Remember that?
We remember. Yeah. If you're on advertising with me, so I'm going to sue you. And it's like, oh, my God.
But I'm all about freedom, aren't I?
Yeah.
So it's just, you got to love it. The freedom to be a Nazi and do Sieg Heils without any repercussions.
And with you still giving me money.
That's interesting. So I get to be a Nazi, but when you say you don't like it, I'm the victim.
Yeah.
That's a very interesting position to take. So,
Hey man, that's the way some people operate, man.
Yeah. I'm not sure where we go with this.
Do you have any final comments before we close this up, man?
I think that's it. I mean,
that's it.
I mean, I guess I could say some Nazi stuff and act like I'm a victim, but I won't.
I prefer you not do that.
Yeah. Me too. I don't do that
some
too.
Other time.
I just won't do it. How about that?
Yeah, there we go. But I think the overriding point, you know, and again, there with any, like, the world is complex, you know, so with anything, the idea that it's not all, with any occurrence or situation, the idea that it's not all one thing doesn't necessarily mean that whatever the major contributing factor is, you shouldn't look at, you shouldn't address. So I think there is something that probably needs more scrutiny when it comes to what's happening with Teslas. I mean, we can't put that all on driver behavior. That's pretty, you know, again, even if you can find some characteristic among all the drivers or a tendency, so to speak, twice the norm is, you know, like that's a lot. And this is, we're talking life and death here. So I
got a joke. This is why eugenics is coming back, man, because they're going to say, no, it was those drivers who were inferior mentally that were not able to drive the car properly. It's that slice, okay? That's the ones. This is where the misdirection is coming,
about
brother.
The people that bought his car, though, so I don't know that he's going to go that direction. So
I won't put it past him.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. So
remember, the Sieg Heils tell us the eugenics is, you know, it's part of the playbook.
So ultimately, though, you're looking at this and you take something away from it. Again, what you take from it, whether it's simple as you vote with your pocketbook and say, look, you know, like, well, if this is the deadliest car brand, maybe that's not the one I'm looking at. I find it one thing I do find interesting, though, as I close this up, though, is that him having the deadliest car brand did not hurt the momentum of the company, you know, like, because this is not, you know, like, this study was done over years from like model years 2018 to 2022. So them being the deadliest car brand, you know, it's like, okay, yeah, they can still have this sterling reputation. As soon as this guy gets up and starts doing all this crazy stuff in the government, then it's like, oh, yeah, let's boycott, let's do all this. So it's really about, and this is kind of this hero worship society we live in, where it's like, once people decided they didn't like the guy anymore, then it's like all of these things that probably should have happened already start to happen. Whereas when they were liking the guy or the guy was cool to them, it was like, all right, yeah, we don't care if the cars, you know, people are dying in these cars, and if he's subverting regulation to allow or to make that keep happening, we rock with this guy, you know? So it's really interesting to me how the things that did slow Tesla's momentum weren't related to the fact that apparently these things are the deadliest car in America based on these numbers.
Yeah, and James, I think that's a great point to finish on, which is therein lies the need to bully the press, right? Because think about it. If you, the only way these things happen are through transparency. So you make a great point. The transparency of this stardom of Elon Musk in the last 3-4 months, meaning him publicly doing Sieg Heils and him behaving a certain way in public, is what led to people responding to not liking Tesla. But it wasn't due to the information that was real, like you're saying, that was being studied for years. Because what happens is, as bullies, like you said, by throwing out these lawsuits and all this stuff over the years and threatening advertisers like we saw last year and all that, he has put a chilling effect on the desire, let's put it that way, maybe not the ability, but the desire for the news media and others who we trust on as the public to give us sunlight and scrutinize these big companies. So it's like the symbiotic environment where the money allows him to push everyone around. And you're right. We're lucky maybe that he was brought into the government so we could really see him be this kind of buffoon so that the public could distance themselves from these fanboys.
I think that it's both. You got to combine all that together, because remember, it's not like we've talked about it many times. You know, it is fake news, supply driven or demand driven. And you end up coming back to the fact that there's a supply piece and a demand piece. But in this case, Elon Musk turning people off to him probably increased the salience for information like this. This same story, it will get clicked on more now because people are already like, ah, man, I don't even know if I like that. Because so like while everybody's, we got so many of these fanboys running around, this same story will be like, you just scroll right through it. But once you start questioning that, then it's like, oh, well, maybe what is this thing about Tesla's being, you know, not that safe? So I think that some of that is, you know, just kind of like, you know, we did that book, The Righteous Mind. And, you know, it's just kind of like that kind of stuff where, you know, once our, to pull from that book, once our elephants start leaning away from him, then we start noticing a lot more things that, you know, it's like, oh, well, maybe this isn't good for my health, you know, type of thing. So, but we can close this topic up for there. But it is interesting, I think, our own society's reaction and what, you know, really gets us going and, you know, and what doesn't, you know, so to speak. And then once we get going, obviously, then it's easy to keep us going down that same road. So, but yeah. Hopefully, you know, all things considered, these type of revelations end up with Tesla's becoming safer cars. You know, like ultimately, that's the main goal for stuff like this, not just for him to close, you know, the department of this monitoring this at the government. So, but yeah, I think we can wrap this topic from there. You'll have a call out for this week as well, so you can check that out as well. But until next time, I'm James Keys.
I am Tunde Romana.
All right, subscribe to the podcast, rate it, review it, tell us what you think, send it to a friend, and we'll talk soon.